You are tuned in to The Nancy Ruffin Show, a digital global classroom where individuals across all ages, backgrounds, and career levels tune in for guidance and motivation to live life on their own terms. Hosted by award-winning author, transformation coach, and the self-proclaimed Latina Oprah, The Nancy Ruffin Show is where inspiring thought leaders, modern-day influencers, and social game changers come to discuss their own personal journeys and have real conversations about the journey to success. It's where the next generation of leaders come to tap into their potential, ignite their fire, and expand their self-awareness. So if you're ready to power up and blaze trails of positive change, then you're in the right place. Let's get started. Testing 1, 2, testing 1, 2. Is this thing on? Yeah, this thing is on and I'm back. It's your girl, Nancy Ruffin. You guys are tuned in to The Nancy Ruffin Show, and we are back from our summer hiatus. I know that many of you have been itching for a new episode simply because you guys have been in my DMs, you have been sending me emails, but your girl needed a break. And I will tell you that taking the summer off was the best decision that I could have made. I am rejuvenated, I am refocused, I'm re-energized, and I'm excited to be back this season. We have so many great things in store for you. The content is going to continue to be better, more impactful, more helpful to you guys. You know that I cater to what you want. So we're going to be talking about all the things that you want to talk about, all the things you want to hear about. And if there's a topic that you want me to address, just shoot me a message. That's what I'm here for. Send me an email to nancy@thefiercewoman.org. You can slide up in my DMs, you know, send me a message on Facebook. I mean, whatever method of communication works best for you, hit me up. I will get it and we will, you know, talk about whatever it is that you guys want to talk about. With that said, I hope you had an amazing summer. I hope that you were able to take some time off for yourself and just enjoy it. We spend so much time killing ourselves, working, neglecting the things that bring us joy, and not spending time with the people that bring us happiness. And for what? Because we gotta work? Listen, even Jesus took time away to rest, okay? God created the world in 6 days, and on the seventh day, he rested. And so I just want to remind you that all work and no play is never a good idea. We're also, there's a bunch of stuff happening, right? Where the beginning of September, kids went back to school this week. And I know for me, I was happy to have them go back. And not because I don't like spending time with my kids, because I do. It's just that when school is out during the summer and I still have to work, it makes it really difficult to find people to watch your kids, man. Like, you know, school, yes, is great because they're there and they're learning, but I mean, it's also kind of like a daycare for us working parents. And so whenever school is out, it's just such a hard thing for me to find people to stay with my kids. My parents are no longer here, you know, living in New Jersey. They're back in Florida. My sister is parented out. She has 3 kids of her own, and she just does not want my 2 to add, you know, to the chaos in her own house when her kids are home for the summer. And then thankfully I have my in-laws who do help out a lot, but I mean, they're also older. And so it's, for me, it's hard to always put my kids on them because my kids are very active. They require a lot of attention. And my in-laws are, you know, they're older. They're in their 70s. And so I never want to take advantage. And I do have them, or I had them in summer camp, but the summer camp doesn't last all summer. It lasts, I think, for my oldest, or for both of them, I think it was maybe the first week of August. And then we had 3 weeks left, you know, in August to figure out what to do with these kids. We ended up taking vacation the last 2 weeks of August. So that left me just with 1 week trying to figure things out. But it was a struggle, you know. And so I'm happy that they are back to school because now my routine is back on. I don't have that stress of having to figure out who's going to watch my kids, where I'm going to leave them, all of that mess. You working parents out there, I know you can feel me on this. But they're back to school. My kids, unfortunately, missed the first day of school because, like I said, we were away on vacation. We vacationed in Florida. And if you've been paying attention to the news, then you know that Florida was on Hurricane Dorian watch. And they just so happened to close the airport on the day we were supposed to fly back home. So our flight got canceled. And because the flight got canceled, the earliest flight that we could get back was Thursday evening. My kids started school Thursday morning. Missed the first day of school. We got back at midnight Thursday. I guess technically that would be Friday, you know, and I had to get come home to prepare them for the next day, for their first day of school. I was exhausted. So I feel like I need another vacation. But anyway, I digress. I just want to wish all of you parents who managed to get your kids back to school, I wish you and them a very successful, productive year. It's, you know, it's no easy feat being a parent. You know, we have to be responsible for raising kind, considerate children. We also have to make sure that they're getting an education. So our job is never done. So guys, I am here with you. Believe me, I know. But with that said, I also want to just take a moment to acknowledge the Bahamas. They got hit pretty bad with Hurricane Dorian. The Abaco Islands are pretty much gone. From what I've been reading, all of the homes have been destroyed. Thousands of people have been displaced. It brings back memories of Hurricane Maria. And my heart and prayers goes out to the Bahamian people. Within the next couple of days or week or so, I'm going to try to figure out what I can do to help with the relief effort in the Bahamas. And so if any of you want to contribute or donate or want to help as well, connect with me and we'll figure something out. But I'm very passionate about getting help into the hands of the people who really need it. And so I'm looking to work with grassroots organizations on the ground in the Bahamas that are working directly with the people. I don't want to go through the government. I don't want to go through Red Cross or any of these, these bigger organizations that, you know, we know have historically delayed sometimes in getting the people who need the aid what they need. So if you know of anyone working on the ground there, please connect me with them because I really want to get involved. So with this episode this week, I want to talk about where we come from. This past weekend, I had an opportunity to go back to my old neighborhood in Brooklyn, Williamsburg, to celebrate the life of my cousin who was murdered 25 years ago at the age of 16. I'm going to talk a little bit about that in the next segment, but really what I want to talk about is where we come from. You know, for those of you who were raised in an urban neighborhood in the inner city, quote unquote, the ghetto, the hood, how does where you come from impact or influence your future? Does it hold you back? Does where you grow up determine the kind of future you're going to have? One of the things that I've been thinking about is the difference in childhood. as it relates to my children and how they're being raised, and the neighborhood that they're being raised in is so different from the neighborhood that I grew up in. And so I want to talk about this dichotomy and the differences that we see, you know, in these neighborhoods, and how, if at all, they influence our future and who we become. So stay tuned. After this break, we're going to get right into this topic.
My name is Avery Ruffin, and you're listening to The Nancy Ruffin Show.
Thanks for sticking around. It's your girl, Nancy Ruffin, and this is The Nancy Ruffin Show. How did you like my baby's drop? You're listening to my mommy, Nancy Ruffin. Listen, I gotta get these kids involved in whatever way I can. It's important for me as a mom to expose my kids to all of the things that I'm doing, because I never want them to pigeonhole themselves into believing that they can only do one thing. You know, so there are times when I am recording the podcast when they do want to participate, they want to feel like they're a part of it. And so I remember one day that I was doing this, and I was like, all right, let me get them to do a drop for me. And that was the result. Alexa has her own drop as well. But, you know, to the parents out there, whatever it is that you are doing, that you're working on, whatever you're spending time on, whether it's creative or not, you know, if your kids show an interest in it, I know that sometimes it's easy to kind of brush them off, but if you take a moment to just include them in it, it does something for their sense of pride. And it also, you know, makes them feel like they're a part of whatever it is that you're doing. And that's exciting. And for me, I don't always do it, because there's times when I have deadlines and, you know, there are times when I can't have them involved. But then there are other times when I do have, you know, some minutes that I could spare that I say, all right, guys, come here and this is what mommy is doing. And so the point I'm trying to make is try to expose your kids to as many things as possible. Encourage them to do things outside of their comfort zone. Encourage them to do things that might scare them a little bit. One of the things that my oldest struggles with is not trying new things, because she's often afraid or she believes she can't do it. And so I'm constantly trying to encourage her in a way that kind of reduces some of the fear and anxiety that she feels around trying new things. And the reason why this is important for me to do as a parent is because I want her to break out of this now while she's a child, because if she doesn't, she's going to carry this with her into adulthood. And as an adult, I don't want her to be afraid to try new things. And I often tell her, you know, what's the worst thing that can happen? You know, you might not get it right. You might fail, but so what? Right? If the worst thing that can happen is that you fail, big deal. But what if you succeed? Right? What if you're able to accomplish that thing that you're so afraid of? For me, the chance of succeeding always pushes me towards doing it, because I can't let the fear of something possibly bad happening or the fear of me failing stop me from attempting to achieve success and achieve greatness. And this kind of falls in line a little bit with what I want to talk about today, because as I mentioned in the first segment, this past weekend I celebrated what would have been the 41st birthday of my cousin Macho. And one of my listeners, shout out to Eileen Carter Campos, mentioned to me, I shared a lot about this in my IG stories over the weekend, and she mentioned that I had never spoken about my cousin Macho in any of my platforms. And she's right. I haven't spoken about him because his death, his untimely death, was something that was very difficult for me to deal with when it happened. He was killed at the age of 16. We were a year apart. I was 17. And he was the closest thing that I had to a brother at that time. We were inseparable. We lived one block away from each other. We went to school together. We spent all our holidays together. We played together. I mean, we vacationed, like, you know, our parents would send us to Puerto Rico over the summer. They would send us together. So we were inseparable. And when he was murdered, it was as if a part of me died as well. And as a teen, it's hard to process that. And I don't even think that I had the outlet at the time to talk about the loss, to talk about how it had affected me and how I was feeling. And I think for me, the easiest way that I found to deal with it was to not deal with it. So to not deal with the feelings, not process them, not grieve, really not talk about it. And so what I didn't realize was that I never talked about it. So this is going to be the actual first time that I speak in depth about it. I wrote about it briefly in my first book, Welcome to Heartbreak, but I never talked about the details behind his murder. And I don't even know if I know all of the details behind his murder because I was so young back then. And I know having a conversation with a friend of mine not too long ago who I grew up with, who she was friends with my cousin as well. I guess let's just get into the story. I guess a little background on Macho was that he was he was the bad kid in the neighborhood, right? He was the kid that was always fighting. He was the kid that would bully other kids. No one messed with Macho. He had created or developed a reputation for himself that was based on fear. So everyone was afraid of this kid. Imagine he was 16 years old, a piece of crap, really. He couldn't even probably wipe his butt properly. But he lived this life that forced him to be this way. His mother, unfortunately, was a drug addict. At the time, she was heavily involved. I believe it was crack. But of course, she was doing all kinds of drugs. His father was an absent father, so he didn't really have a relationship with his dad. I think his dad had moved to Puerto Rico and had pretty much abandoned him. And so he had no real father figure. His stepfather at the time was probably one of the big time drug dealers in our neighborhood. So here you have a kid who had no real parental supervision, guidance, no one to really care about his well-being or the direction of his life. He was pretty much raised by his grandmother, who did the best that she could. You know, she did the best that she could. She was raising him and his sister. And he became a product of his environment. So at 16 years old, he was selling drugs. Always dressed to the nines, had the newest sneakers, jewelry, but he wasn't anyone to be messed with, and people were afraid of him. And I think what really made him scary was that he was fearless. And I think he was fearless because deep down inside, he knew that he had nothing to lose, right? His mother was who she was. He had no relationship with his father. And at the end of the day, he relied really on himself. And so this kid had no fear. And because he had no fear, he didn't care about anything that he was doing. And he would fight grown men, little kids. He was a terror. And I say this with all the love in my heart for this boy because he was my brother. But I don't want to pretend that he was an angel, and ironically that was his name, his real name is Angel, when he wasn't. And had he not been a relative of mine, I would have been afraid of him as well. And so, you know, this past weekend, his sister and one of the other guys in the neighborhood wanted to celebrate his memory. They wanted to honor his memory and celebrate his life. His birthday is September 8th. So his birthday just passed. Yesterday was his birthday. And they wanted to celebrate his life. And being amongst this community of people who revered my cousin in his young life, 16 only when he was killed, but the way they spoke of him was as if he was a man who had lived this long life. I was in awe, really, because of the way people spoke about how he was there for them and how they could always go to him and he would give people the shirt off his back. And these are things that were all really true, because as violent as he could have been at times, when it came to his community, when it came to the people that he loved, when it came to his family, he would do anything for anyone. And, you know, I had someone send me a message the other day sharing a story that they had about his impact on them. And she shared that when her mother had owned this laundromat business on his, like maybe a block or two away from where he lived, that he was always in there playing, I think, Street Fighter or, I don't know, one of these arcade games. But that he always went in there respectfully and he always asked, you know, the owner if she needed help, if there was anything he could do, you know, to help her, to help the business. And that during the times when people would get out of line in there, or it would get rowdy, that he would put people in his place, demanding that they respect this woman's place of work, you know, and that pretty much summed up his character. Not to take away from all of the bad stuff that he did, but at his core, and I think that the young woman that shared this story with me, she said that at his core, he was someone who had a huge heart. He was full of love. He was just misunderstood. And I think that that summarized who he was perfectly, because to really understand Macho and how he became who and what he became, you have to understand the things that that influenced him and the things in his life and in his past that forced him to pretty much take care of himself. And I think that a lot of what he was doing was surviving. He had developed this skill as a survival mechanism. And I think that for him, he needed to protect himself. And the way that he did that was by not allowing others to get close to him and oftentimes bullying people, because he needed people to respect him and to be afraid of him so that they wouldn't attack him or come for him. And at the end, ironically, the person who killed him was someone who he had bullied once too many times. And I guess this kid was tired of being bullied and he shot him in the middle of the day on a very busy street. It was like under the train station, and he ended up dying on the cold concrete floor of the Brooklyn neighborhood that he was born in and he lived in. And to just kind of put things in perspective of how grown he was at such a young age, that at the time of his death, he left behind a 10-month-old daughter. You know, and so 16 years old, his mother was a drug addict, his father was absent from his life, he pretty much raised himself, and he was a father. And so when I think about the neighborhood that I grew up in, that was the story for so many people in that neighborhood. I know so many people who lost their lives at young ages. I know so many people who were teen parents. And I know so many others who never even had an opportunity to get out of the neighborhood. And I know this because when I went back there this weekend, I saw so many of the people that I grew up with still there. By the same token, I also know others who grew up there who made it out, myself included. And I know so many others who went on to do great things with their lives. I have a good friend of mine who went on to Johns Hopkins University, you know, others who are doing really great, impactful work in other industries and other fields. And when I think about all of the challenges that we faced just living in this inner city neighborhood, you know, I remember we lived right across the street from this park, the playground, and we had to share this park with drug addicts and drug dealers. And I would constantly see, you know, syringes on the ground, crack vials. I knew the different colored type of drugs from the different colored caps that the crack vials had. They had blue tops, orange tops, red tops. Like, there was all different colors for the different types of drugs. And I knew this. You know, I knew that when you would see someone walking down the street looking like a zombie, right? They were practically sleepwalking. You knew it was because they were strung out on drugs. And then I take a look at my own children and the environment that they're growing up in, and they are not seeing any of this. They're not being exposed to any of this. And it's funny because when we got to Brooklyn, you know, on Saturday, like the music was pumping, everybody was out. It was very reminiscent of the neighborhood that I grew up in back in the days. But my kids are not exposed to any of this. So when they're walking around and they're like culture shock because all of this is brand new to them. And ironically, even with all of this bad stuff that was happening, you know, when I was growing up there, I don't really, those things are not the things that stand out for me. You know, what stands out for me is how beautiful it was to live in a community where everybody knew you, where everyone had your back. Like, we could not walk down any street in Williamsburg where people didn't know us. Because as bad as it was, I always felt safe in my neighborhood. I knew that nothing would happen to me in my neighborhood. Nobody was going to touch me because they knew that me and my sister were Danny and Tiny's daughters. They knew all of our uncles. They knew our aunts, our cousins. I mean, half the freaking neighborhood was my family. So we definitely wasn't getting touched. But, you know, that is what I miss. Being able to be with my family. My grandmother lived up the block from me. My uncles and my aunts lived in the same building. A couple of more blocks down, I had more cousins, more aunts, more uncles. A few more blocks down in the projects, I had more cousins. You know, so we were always together. We went to school together. We celebrated all our holidays together. And my children don't have any of that because everyone is scattered now. Everyone, you know, is living in different states, in different places. Even my sister and I, who both live in New Jersey and we're only a 10-minute, you know, drive away from each other, we still have to drive to see each other. Like, we are not walking distance from one another. And so my kids are never going to know what it's like to live in a building where you knew exactly what was happening in your neighbor's house because everything was on blast. I had a neighbor who lived on the third floor. Her name was Susie. She was the mom to my best friend at the time, Jessica and Kiana. And we always knew when them girls were in trouble because you would hear Susie screaming to the top of her lungs, "Jessica! Kiana!" I mean, and you knew, it was like, oh shit, they in trouble. But like, my kids are never going to experience that. They're never going to know what it's like to just sit out in the front of your building, you know, in the middle of the summer, just to get some cool air because it was too damn hot in your apartment. And I can't remember for the life of me why we didn't have an AC in my apartment. Like, I don't remember us ever having air conditioning. All I remember was fans. And y'all know, New York City, when it gets hot in the summer and it's 90, 95 degrees, those fans are only blowing hot air. So for us, the only relief we had was going outside and being outside and hopefully trying to catch this breeze, you know. But my kids won't know that. They don't know life without air conditioning. They don't know life without cell phones, without iPods, without iPads. I mean, all of these things that we as parents work for, right? Because every generation wants to give their children what, you know, better than what we had, you know. And even with that, like, my parents were trying to give my sister and myself better than what they had, you know. So eventually we moved out of Brooklyn. My parents became homeowners, but it was the time that I spent in Williamsburg that really forged who I would become. It was those experiences that cultivated this appreciation for always going back and always giving back, right? Because for me, I recognize the blessings and the privilege that I have and the opportunities that I have because I had parents who were invested in my future, parents who cared about whether or not I became something. And so when we talk about hoods, right, and neighborhoods and where we come from and where you grow up in, I don't think it matters where you start. I think that it depends on the influence of those around you, because you can grow up in the hood, you can grow up in the ghetto, but if you have people who care about you, who care about your success, who care about you becoming something, they're going to do all that they can to make sure that you become something. And that can happen whether you're in the hood or whether you live on Park Avenue or Fifth Avenue. And by the very same context, you can grow up rich and privileged and have all of these material things that many people believe bring joy and happiness. But if the influence around you is that they don't care about you and they leave you to fend for yourself, right, then that person who financially may seem to have it all can grow up to be unsuccessful. I mean, and we see it all the time. We see how these rich kids get turned out, strung out on drugs, right? Because they don't have the foundation or the support within their own families that are pushing them towards their greatness. So it, for me, it doesn't matter where you're raised. It doesn't matter where you come from. We all have the ability to become successful. But the difference is that some may have the support and others may not. And not saying, you know, because there are some who may not have the support who can still become successful. But then that comes from an innate place within yourself that strives, you know, that wants to achieve that success. And, you know, just being back in that neighborhood this weekend and being able to talk to some of the younger kids, you know, I was telling my husband that sometimes they make poor choices because they don't know any better and they don't have anyone telling them better. And sometimes, you know, when you don't see success, when there's no one around you who is successful, you don't know what that looks like. You don't even know where to begin, you know. And a lot of times that's what keeps some of these people stuck in those situations, because they just don't know how to get out of it, you know. And so for me, it's like, how do we show what's possible? Right. And that's why I go back, because I need people from where I come from to see that it is possible, to see that I did it, that I was able to get out. And the way I was able to get out is by going to school. And that's just the honest truth. I went to school even when I didn't know what I wanted to study in, when I didn't know what I wanted to be, when I didn't know what my major was. I still went to school because I knew that as long as I went to school and as long as I learned and I gained knowledge, eventually I would figure it out. And so while school isn't for everybody, you have to figure out what is going to work for you, what's going to motivate you to take action, to push yourself towards your success. And as parents, what can we do to support our children in their dreams and making sure that we're not imposing our dreams and our wants on our children? Because I see that as well. You can't want your life for your kid. You have to support their decisions and as best as you can, guide them to make the best decisions for themselves. Not saying that you have to sit back and watch them self-destruct, because now that's not what we're going to do over here. We're going to make sure that they're headed in a positive direction, but that they're doing what they love and what's going to make them happy. Because I will tell you, when you do work that you love, when you do work that you're passionate about, you are going to be successful. And success looks different for everyone. So what I deem successful may not be what the next person deems as successful, but you know what? It's irrelevant. Success is what you define it to be. And never allow anyone to diminish your dreams, your desires, the things that you know you're capable of accomplishing. And if you don't have anyone in your life that can support your dreams, I encourage you to seek people out that will. They are out there. We all need a support system. We cannot make it through this life alone. Unfortunately, some of us are not born with that support structure in place, right? Others are. I'm grateful that I had that support system. I have great parents. I have great extended family. I mean, my aunts, my uncles, all of them would not accept anything but greatness from me and my sister, which is ironic because a lot of them were drug addicts themselves. A lot of them had made really poor choices in their own lives, but they knew because they made poor choices in their own lives that they were not going to let us make those same choices. I mean, I had an uncle, rest in peace, who also was murdered because he held up a bodega on Bushwick Avenue and, you know, at gunpoint. And he did this to support a drug habit. And this was my favorite uncle at the time. And I remember him vividly. He died. He was killed when I was 3 years old. Imagine that. Not many of us have memories from when we're 3 years old. But I will tell you that this man had such an impact on my life that I remember him. I remember the times that I spent with him. I remember the day of his funeral. I remember the funeral home. I remember the casket. I remember that he was wearing a beige or cream colored suit. I was 3 years old. But when people have that much of an impact on you, you remember. You remember. And so that's why it's so important in this work that I do to be able to impact, to be able to influence, even if it's one person, then I have done my job. Because everything that I have ever achieved, I've had to work for. Nothing was given to me. I was not born with a silver spoon in my mouth. You know, my parents were on public assistance. I was on Medicaid, like all of these things that I'm not embarrassed or ashamed to talk about, because all of it contributed to the person who I am today. And so I want you guys, as I end this podcast, to think about legacy. What is your legacy? Because I think about my cousin Macho, and at his young age, 16 years old, he left a legacy. Not even thinking about doing that, because no one's thinking about that at 16. And he wasn't even trying to leave a legacy because he was bad. But yet and still, he had an impact on the people in his community. I mean, enough that they have made September 7th Macho Day in that neighborhood. And so like every September 7th, they will now have this annual block party, you know, memorializing this boy's life. And he created a legacy. And so how do you want to be remembered? When it's all said and done, and when your time here on earth is over, what will people say about you? What you do today, what you do tomorrow, what you do every single day of your life is creating your legacy. My life is my message. My life is my mission. And it's what I do on the daily that I want people to remember me by. I think about legacy a lot because one of the things that I'm afraid of is being forgotten. I want my time here to matter, to mean something, that when they mention my name, that people will say, wow, she was a great person. She did all she could to help others. And I don't want it to be just in words, but that my actions are exhibiting that. And so as you start your week, as you start your day, I challenge you to think about your own life. What are you doing to create your legacy? And how is your life impacting or influencing others? And with that, mi gente, I'm going to end this week's show. Thank you for tuning in. Make sure you subscribe. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it. Please give us a review. Leave me your comments. I read them all. I look forward to them. And until next time, guys, go out there and crush those goals.
Thank you for listening to the Nancy Ruffin Show.